Welcome to CRE Radio with Howard Klein, radio for and about the commercial real estate professional. Our focus is exploring issues facing landlords and tenants, property and asset managers, investors, brokers, lenders, and everyone in the industry. Our style is conversation over coffee with highly experienced commercial real estate professionals. Over 35 years, Howard's legal and commercial real estate practice has centered on broker, leasing, and property management issues. CRE Radio is presented with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our audience. Access our archive shows, upcoming schedule, and engaging articles at creradio.com or subscribe to the show on iTunes by searching for CRE Radio. And now, here's Howard Klein.
Hello, everyone. This is CRE Radio. Our topic today is buying and selling of real estate notes. And our featured guests are Eric Paulson with Auction.com and Bob Klein from RW Klein. Our call-in number is 619-393-6492. That's 619-393-6492. If you would like to call in and leave a comment or ask a question, press 1 to talk. Or you can contact us on Twitter both before and after the show using the @CRE Radio, or you can send questions to creradio.com/notes. We have on our website your ability to make comments, ask questions, even there. And a lot of times that happens long after the show, because I know some of you listen to this as a recorded event rather than live. Again, if you would like to leave a comment or ask a question, please do so by calling into 619-393-6492 and press 1 to get into the queue. Today's topic, and I got some great guests today, today's topic is we're going to be talking about not selling real estate. We're going to be talking about buying and selling of loan documents that are secured by dirt and buildings. We're not going to be talking about the creation of the loan and the loan documents, but we're going to be talking about a totally separate asset from the real property, but it's related. Now, we'll also be talking about, in some instances and in some states, they refer to these as mortgages or deeds of trust, Our focus is going to be on commercial notes, not residential. For the purpose of the discussion, commercial includes multifamily residential, such as apartments, and may include undeveloped, partially developed, or developed residential communities. So, gentlemen, Eric, Bob, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Howard. Happy to be here.
Yes, thank you very much for having us.
If you would, why don't we start out with Eric? Eric, could you give us a 30-second, very brief introduction of who you are and what it is that you do?
Probably not. I'm one of those guys that likes to talk a lot, but
I can cut you off. I have a kill button here, so.
And I won't use my radio voice.
Okay.
Sure. So this is Eric Paulson. I'm with Auction.com. I run the commercial division within Auction.com. Prior to that, I've spent 12 years at CB Richard Ellis as an investment salesman, and then the 11 years after that, I was at L&R Property on the development side, working as an acquisition and disposition officer nationwide and sat on their investment committee. I also helped the L&R Special Servicing Group underwrite assets that they were looking to acquire and help them monitor assets they'd already acquired out in the western region. Big history in transacting real estate. Over the past couple of years, I've probably sold about $4 billion worth of notes in real estate. Believe it or not, mostly notes in 2011, mostly real estate in 2012. And that'd probably be my 30 seconds.
Wow, great. And Bob, why don't you give us your brief 30-second elevator speech?
Not a problem. Hard to follow that one. I'm Bob Klein. I'm the CEO of RW Klein Companies. We have multiple vertical components in our company, which we have a loan sales operation, a capital markets operation, and a former advisory side. I've been in the industry for 30 years. We specialize in debt and equity capital platforms, co-invest, As I said, obviously for the purpose of this conversation, loan sales. We have 6 offices nationwide and about 60 folks working for us, and a little over $3 billion last year in placement, and certainly on track for that this year. And we just completed our 519th note sale in the last 48 months.
Great.
Wow, that's really good. Gentlemen, why don't we get right into the conversation now? Let's talk about what the logic is in buying and selling notes. What are the benefits to the sellers and buyers? And Eric, why don't you start on that?
Sure. The benefits to the seller may have the inability to actually foreclose on the real estate, or their basis in it is so high that it just needs to be reset. So for them, selling the note is the best alternative that'll maximize the values for them. It's just they can't take it on to the next step, or it's just easier, whether it be politically. You've been hearing a lot of negative press going against the banks foreclosing on, I know we're not going to talk about residential, but that seems to be the hot button for everybody. You know, kicking the American out of his American dream and being the mean, nasty bank. So some of the political fallout all the way down to just economics. It just makes sense. They may be into something so much and so deep and just not have the infrastructure in place to work it that a sale of the note is a benefit to them, and that's the seller's side. For the buyer's side, there's a couple of different approaches.
Why don't I let Bob talk about or approach this from the buyer's side just to split it. Bob, go ahead.
I think, with Eric's comments, it's spot on. I mean, the way the reality is going on between the bad press and other things, it trickles actually into the CRE market as well to some degree. And so from a buyer's perspective, obviously, most buyers want to be able to look at whatever they can possibly look at. I mean, the rule of thumb is when they call and say, I'll buy whatever you have, that's not usually a good call. It doesn't usually end well. When they call with the same, distinctive properties they actually would like to buy, I mean, that's the one advantage Eric's system has, because they can blatantly and broadly advertise for the creditors all the different loans that they have out for sale. So as opposed to an indicative bid process like us and others use, ours aren't really necessarily always going to be out on the forefront for that purpose, because the creditors might want less of a viewing eye to it or a different reason. I mean, that's one reason people go to auction.com, so they get that exposure, and it's a great exposure platform. But as a buyer, I would hope as a buyer I'm actually buying something. I'm not only wanting to buy the note, but if I have to, I'm willing to own and operate it, because of the likelihood that I might have to foreclose. And if doing so as a buyer, I need to be prepared for that. We have so many buyers that come in so unprepared, that just want to buy the note and figure they're going to get either a coupon play out of it, or if it's easy foreclosure, well, that couldn't be further from the truth. It just takes, tremendous process. It's a long time, running, so to speak, and you're not buying the real estate, you're buying the notes. So there's a big difference. So I think having somebody educate you or walk you through the process, or using Eric's tutorial they have on their website and their people there, or ours or others, is always a great way to go about it, to understand what you're looking at. Because, again, you're not buying a deed. You're buying, in most cases, you're just buying the actual note itself, and you don't have, title of the property, and you're going to have to figure out what you want to be. Are you loaning to own, or are you, going to hold on to the note and get the coupon?
Yeah, that's a great point too. With the education process, I've got a fun story where we went to auction with a note on a property where the borrower was in a bankruptcy, and then the partnership was in a different bankruptcy. So you had a Chapter 7 and a Chapter 11 ongoing, and the bidding was commencing, and we had a winning bidder. And the winning bidder called me up after the auction and said, what do I do next? And I said, well, congratulations for winning. You're going to get a call from our contracts people, and we're going to take you through the closing process. And he goes, oh, no, I completely understand that. I said, well, what do I do with the property? And it's like, well, hang on. You didn't buy the property. You bought the note, as we've discussed. And since you've got all this bankruptcy, I'm going to do two things. One, I know the guy who is bidding right underneath you. He's very interested in the property. He's very interested in the note and understands it. I will let you walk away, and we'll call this a fun exercise. You learned how to do it, but I will return your deposit, and I'll sell it to the next guy. Or two, you need to get your hands on a very good bankruptcy attorney and start understanding the bankruptcy further, like we encouraged you to do during due diligence, and go forward there. He goes, okay, great. Do you know any good bankruptcy attorneys? Oh, boy.
Oh, well, if are you asking me? Actually, on that note, no pun intended, I'm going to tell everybody that you're listening to the buying and selling of notes on CRE Radio. And when we come back, we're going to talk about not only some brief history of the process of buying and selling notes over the last 10 years, as well as the question that has got to be on the tip of everyone's tongue is, why would you buy or sell a note versus buying and selling the real property? So we'll be right back.
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Blocks CRE. Built by brokers for brokers, Building Blocks CRE is the dead simple, best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more. Easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit blockcre.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Blocks CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. See for yourself. Log on to blockcre.com.
If you need anything with your company logo on it, you need Monogram Magic. T-shirts, ball caps, polo shirts, anything. Monogram Magic does it beautifully, does it right, and does it right on time. For over 20 years, Monogram Magic has produced corporate apparel your people will be proud to wear. Large orders or small, it's all about attention to detail. See for yourself. Here's the website, logostolife.com. That's L-O-G-O-S, the number 2, then L-I-F-E.com, logostolife.com. For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @creradio or via email to questions@creradio.com.
Welcome back to CRE Radio. We're glad to have you with us today. Before the break, we were talking, actually, we were listening to Eric tell a little story about an inexperienced person who really didn't have the experience to buy notes. And fortunately, it was a funny story. Why don't we, Bob, if you could, step back a second. And you've been in the note business for nearly 30 years. Why don't you tell us a little bit of the history, just going back about 10 years and how things have changed. And then we'll get to the question of, and I think part of that answer will be, why people have been buying notes and want to buy notes or sell them.
Sure. Well, I mean, this goes back, you know, long before the 10-year run, but even just going back 10 years, or let's just call it post-RTC period, notes usually in the past have historically been sold for on a more privatized basis, direct lender purchaser acquisition, where in the old days you could go to a creditor, a lender, whomever it may be, and say, you know, I know you have some defaults, you know, we'd like to buy it, here's our purchasing power, here's what we can do. Majority of those in the old days were who you knew, and if you knew the right people, you got in there. It's kind of that way to a degree today, with the exception of Eric's auction system, because it's very live. And you need to kind of know what's going out there. I mean, some of the notes we market are very private, where maybe a hedge fund or a small institution or even a large banking institution has it, but they don't want everybody to know about it. They kind of want to have 4 or 5, maybe 10, 12 bidders on it. And we kind of run at that process. The old days, we didn't have, obviously, the technology yet. So, I mean, pre-fax, we were literally hand-carrying documents to the banks. People would call up looking for things. Banks would come to us. We would know where to place those loans. We would go out and actually place those loans at that point in time, hand-to-hand, and physically doing it. Then, obviously, the fax machine came around, so that helped things a lot. And the fax was obviously more than 10 years ago, but it really was the Internet that has changed the industry tremendously. And what it's done is given such a bigger window to it where, one, we can advertise and get out to more people, but more importantly, people can correspond with us. And then with the Internet came along the virtual databases and the lockboxes where we can actually put the vaults of material and keep them in a secure format. We used to go pick up boxes, file boxes of loans, and still in some cases we still do, but a majority of it is electronic now. And if it's not, it has to be also for the new Dodd-Frank rules. So depending on whether you're buying a balance sheet loan or you're buying a CMBS loan, you're going to find more and more of that is electronic now, which is going to be this huge paradigm from 10 years ago to today. So in the past, I'd say efficiency and due diligence was extremely tough. Now, with the internet and with the files that are provided in a sale, whether it's through Eric's platform or others, you get to see a lot more of it. But, you know, I think Eric's story was spot on. I would say a lot of borrowers just or buyers show up to buy, don't really have a clue about it, and don't even know they have to operate it. And it's an interesting case. But if anything, I would say is technology has changed the industry, has changed how things are done from the old way to the new day, and I'm sure there'll be something new down the road. I mean, now people are buying on their smartphones, so that's really where it's taken off to.
Well, it's part of the still part of the same thing. Eric, why don't you take it from, when did Auction.com start doing commercial loans?
Sure. We started doing commercial loans a little bit more in detail in 2009 towards the end of. Gained a little bit of momentum in 2010, but really had a huge boost in 2011. And I'm going to just, if I could, differentiate really quickly on one thing. There's performing notes, there's sub-performing notes, and there's non-performing notes. On the performing notes, that usually was a direct deal. To Bob's point, in the older days, the banks were just right-sizing their balance sheets, and they'd trade amongst themselves, or they'd have a broker-dealer who's helping them with their balance sheets, and they went to a limited pool. Sub-performing and non-performing, you went to your bank and just said, hey, do you have anything? And banks were willing to deal with their borrowers. Usually it was one borrower trading to another. Now on the non-performing, you actually have a lot of the securitizers or special servicers, which is a different bucket, if you will, of non-performing notes compared to, you know, a bank. You know, they have different methods of selling. They've got a fiduciary relationship versus a balance sheet relationship. So you started seeing the banks be a little bit more along the lines of trying to right size, and they were a little bit more related to being more private. You know, they didn't want to let people know they were having problems. You don't want that run on the bank, you know. That's kind of a concept out there, whereas the special servicers were a little bit more open. So for us, we got our really big boost in 2011. We took about, we sold about $2.8 billion worth of non-performing notes and real estate. And of that, I would say a good 90% of that was notes. So 2011 was a big year for notes, and we had a lot of buyers, which is interesting, and that what's kind of changed on us now is the buyer in 2011 really did not have a lot of options. There was not a lot of real estate on the market. There was not a lot of other investment areas where they could put their money, but there were a lot of notes coming to market. So you had the normal note buyers out there, but they were augmented by a tremendous amount of people that did not have a lot of experience buying notes, but were comfortable knowing about real estate, or at least played in that realm a little bit. Now here in 2012, those buyers, there's enough real estate on the market and enough other places to put their money, they're not buying notes as aggressively as they were in 2011, and the normal, or, you know, in quotes, regular players in that note field are back into being kind of the one group out there buying notes. So we have seen a little bit of a change from 2011 to 2012 in just the buyer pool shrinking, growing, and then shrinking back again to those that are more comfortable, whether it be lesson learned or they have another place to put their dollars.
Well, Eric, wouldn't you also agree that potentially since the REO market picked up so much in 12, that certainly modified and changed the perspective where creditors were theoretically possibly able to go to REO and get a little bit more net present value back out of some of the assets? Not all of them, but some of them as a
Oh, no, that's a great point. I can point to an auction that we just did yesterday, but that's a great point. We took a note to auction late last year and did not get a lot of activity on it. This is off in New York, around the note range of $8, $9 million. The lender foreclosed on it, brought it back to auction, and we just traded it yesterday, you know, beyond $18 million. So the differential between the note value and the real estate value with somebody comfortable enough to take it back was extremely significant in that case. You know, it's not every story, but yes, there's a little bit more of a quick window hope certificate. If I foreclose on this, I can do something to it and turn it back around as real estate and hopefully recapture more of my dollars. Because in 2011, you know, if we sold a $10 million note, we would sell it for $5.8 million or 58 cents on the dollar. but the real estate itself was worth $6 million. So we were selling 58 cents on the dollar from UPB, but 97% of the real estate value. That's a pretty small differential between all of the efforts and risks you get in buying a note and foreclosing on it to get to the real estate versus the actual real estate value once you're all done going through that process. That's changed now.
Well, what, let's pause briefly for a word from our sponsors. Stay with us, and when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of these changes that have gone on.
If you're a retail tenant, you really should belong to the NRTA. They're an organization of the tenants, by the tenants, and for the tenants. Whether you manage a large portfolio or just a mom and pop, the National Retail Tenants Association is on your side. NRTA exists to protect retail tenants everywhere and to make sure landlord billings are correct. Don't wait for your next statement of CAM charges to arrive. Log on to retailtenants.org. That's retailtenants.org. Find out more today. What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail, and it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com. Create your own account. Market your empty spaces or view available locations for your business. All on one convenient site. PopUpInsider.com.
Welcome back to CRE Radio. Thanks for being with us. Before we go on any further, I do want to make a little shout out here. We want to send out some congratulations to Lisa Hoyt and all of our good friends over at the Hoyt Organization who will be rolling out their new YouTube channel in the next few days. I've been working on YouTube, and this is really an exciting new step for a cutting-edge team of marketing pros. Watch for more in info and links to the channel to be posted on CRE Radio. Really like those videos. And if you go to our website, you'll be seeing some of the videos that we've been doing from Recon, and we've got some more coming up over at the ICSC Western Division Conference. Before the break, we were talking about some of the history of the selling of notes and the changes that have gone on over, the last year, because the values of real property have improved. How do you determine the fair market value of these notes in relation to the fair market value of the real property? Eric?
Sure. The note itself, one thing that you'll look at is you'll start by underwriting the collateral, whatever that be, whether it be a shopping center, an office building, industrial building, multifamily. Figure out what the value of the real estate is based on, you know, market comps, your underwriting, and your own yield hurdles. But when you value a note, it's a different story. You do want to understand the value of the collateral underneath it. So you're going to start with that as a basis point of where you want to end up. But there's a lot of costs along the way depending upon where your note is located. And by that I mean by state. There are non-judicial states like like Arizona and Nevada and Texas, where literally you are filing documents with a title company, you're providing a notice provision, and then you're going through the foreclosure process, and then you have a much easier pathway, if you will, to exercising the your collateral agreement and getting your hands on the piece of real estate. There are other states, Florida, New York, California, where you practice, so you'll correct me if I'm wrong on some of these, or even in Michigan, Ohio, where it's even more difficult, where it's a judicial state. You have to go on the courthouse steps. It's a lot longer. There's more legal fees. In Michigan, there's a redemption period where even after you foreclose, you know, the borrower still has a time period to pay you back and reclaim the real estate. So you start taking those costs into effect when you're balancing, okay, my end result, the collateral is worth X, but now I'm going to have to start deducting Y, therefore I can pay Z for the note.
Bob, how do you determine the value of those costs, particularly in a a judicial foreclosure state? California is kind of a hybrid, but I can look at it. Now, I've been involved in it, but I'm not sure how you really can value the issues that come up.
Well, I mean, we look at it in a couple different ways. The first way is that we anticipate litigation on any note that we are out there buying. Okay, so I'll put on the buyer's hat for a second, something that we're not selling but we're buying. So we're automatically going to factor in a carry for the time period, because if you take a state like that where, as Eric said, I mean, you go to Arizona or Texas, I mean, you're in and out of there very fast. Let's call it 60, 90 days and you're done. You go to these other states, you could be a couple years. So I need to have carrying power for that real estate for the 2 years. I need to be able to potentially put CapEx into them to keep them, to improve them, make them better of value, whatever's going to be the case if I want to take that risk. So pricing it is really going to be based, one, on what state it's in, number two, the type of collateral that it really is, whether it's retail, you know, I won't call it multifamily at this point in time because the market's been so hot there, but retail, office, I think that's where you're going to see it more often than not. And those sectors are slowly coming back. I mean, retail's coming back substantially, surprisingly so. So, you know, where we would go, and I'll put this out there, when we buy a note, we usually average between $75,000 and $100,000 that we put in a reserve account that we hold on to that, and because we think we're going to need it for carry or for legal matters that could come up in that year. So, you know, we strongly suggest people come in, you know, if you, let's put it this way, if you have $5 million and you're going to go buy the note and it's $5 million or $4.99, you're not going to have enough money to sit on that loan for a year or two if that's what it takes. I mean, as a buyer of notes, I really want to kind of come in with the original sponsor. I want to know all about it. You know, kind of know the whole deal, and maybe I even let them get a piece of the tail in the backside if they're, you know, allowed to do it. Maybe they're a bad borrower; they're not allowed to do it. So, you know, the devil's in the details, or in some cases, the devil details that you don't know about. And I think if you're going to price things, you have to price accordingly. But you know, we look at the properties; we do a physical inspection on every one of them if we can. Certainly, chrome through all the documents that Eric's vault has, or our vault has, or anybody else's vault has. Really understand what we're looking at. We do our own net present value market research on it. We do broker opinion of values. Great way to get the brokers involved. So you really get an approach. And then you could obviously, if you can somehow come up with an appraisal, but, you know, I personally like the broker opinion of values because it's going to give me a little bit closer range and, you know, we can usually hit our mark better.
Well, Bob, when you talk about the carry costs, I think the carry costs, one of the things to even remember is that the borrower may just be walking away from the property. So your carry costs may be paying insurance, taxes, HOA fees, or anything along those lines just to keep current so you don't get additional liens on the property that might, you know, if you don't pay your taxes, the government may come in and sell that tax note out from underneath you to somebody else, and now you're dealing with even more of a third party. So you're almost, some of your carry costs are almost keeping the property current, not just the note that you're working on.
You're spot on. I'll give you a real quick example. We just had a deal in Orlando. The exact thing happened. The sponsor left basically overnight. The keys were FedExed to us for Monday morning. We weren't even finally in the foreclosure. He just had enough. You know, we tried working with him. We were going to restructure him, actually. But he just didn't have the mental capacity, and obviously I don't think he would have ultimately had the financial capacity to carry it forward. We had to drop $6 million in that property literally in 30 days of that point of time, and we weren't even finished in the foreclosure process, but it was the only way we could protect the value of the asset. So I had to take the $6 million, and now I got to extrapolate that over the time till the foreclosure is finalized, which we're going to have a fast one because of the process, but you know, in most cases you wouldn't. And you know, so the cost of carry can vary whether it's a $15,000 carry or a $300,000 carry.
Right, and as we're talking about states, one of the other things, and I'm going to keep interrupting you, Howard, sorry about that, but I can't help
You're
myself.
You're more than welcome.
it's a bad habit, I can't help myself. But one of the other things to kind of also come into play is as you're dealing with each state and you're talking about judicial and going through the judicial process, there are some states that are actually making it more difficult for the lender to take the real estate by passing laws. I know in Nevada they passed an assembly bill. When you buy a note for $10 million, it's a $10 million UPB, unpaid principal balance, $10 million note, and you buy it for $5 million. When you go to the courthouse steps, you still have to open it up to the market to have the market be able to top or buy that note. It's not just it becomes yours. You do go to a public auction, if you will, on the courthouse steps. Well, in Nevada, they've basically said it's not, you cannot credit bid. You can't bid up to the $10 million UPB as the lender. You're going to only be allowed to bid up to what you bought it for. So now you could go buy a note for $5 million from my platform, from Bob, whomever, and then when you go to exercise and go to foreclose, somebody can show up on the courthouse steps and pay $5 million and $1 and could take the real estate. So you also have to just make sure that whatever your state you're playing in, you understand the rules of the game in that state and just be prepared for that.
Yeah, the valuation has a lot to do with the state. Listen, we'll be right back with more from our guests. Stay with us here on CRE Radio.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. tacticsmagazine.com.
Do more business with your biggest clients. Techniques Marketing has perfected exciting new ways to increase your revenue with all your key accounts, way beyond trial and error. And we've done it with some of the biggest companies in America. Look, if you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, let's talk. Visit TechniquesMarketing.com. T-E-C-H, that's the tech. N-I-Q-U-E-S, there you've got the Neeks. TechniquesMarketing.com. For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio or via email to questions@CREradio.com.
You're listening to Buying and Selling of Commercial Real Estate Notes with our guests Eric Paulson and Bob Klein. Welcome back. Before the break, we were talking about considerations, and I think points and valuation of notes. One of the key points that I think is being made is that valuing notes is based upon factors that are perhaps totally different from the factors that you might consider in valuing real estate. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, absolutely. And if you look at, if you're buying notes, I always use the note as basically my value add tool. And can I buy at the right price where I have enough space inside between where it is today and what I could bring it back to in the time frame that my capital can, can ride it out and basically get my return out of it. As a buy on the asset, then I already know pretty much my hard costs, what I'm looking at, and then what my potential capex or something like that would be. So in a day like today where people are looking for more of a value add, the notes are probably more preferred for that reason. But there are a lot less notes out there for sale. I mean, Eric's company gobbles up a tremendous amount of them. We do a lot of niche plays, so ours is a little different. But, I mean, there aren't nearly as many notes for sale today as there were. Now, it doesn't mean there won't be. There's certainly a lot of maturities coming forward in the next few years. But inventory itself is definitely down. So if you look at it that way, it's definitely a way, to remember.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the detail of the factors that you would consider. And I do want to talk about the credit bid situation because I have to deal with that considerably. And the issue that the value really, to a great extent, depends upon the state that the property is located and that is the security for the note. Let's step back a second. Recourse versus non-recourse, and this varies from state to state. Is that something that either the two of you consider as part of the factors? Okay, Bob.
It's a great question, Howard. I mean, from my perspective, I've always been a restructure guy, a buy and try to be friends with everybody type of guy. So for me, I don't look at securities or guarantees or recourse as a lever. There are several that do. Obviously, if you're trying to sell something and there's something in there in terms of recourse, it certainly is an added benefit. But you rarely see people collect on that. I mean, they'll try, and some do succeed. You end up getting some kind of negotiated settlement. So, I mean, if you want to value add through that, that's fine. I mean, in RTC, that happened all the time. There were several companies in the Midwest and Texas and else, and that's all they did was buy the recourse portion of these loans. There's some out there now that have come back and are doing it again, but it's just not the most common scenario. From a buyer standpoint, I would like it only in the sense that it would just allow me to have more information on what I'm buying, not to go collect the cash. There are some that do that, but from a buyer standpoint or a small loan standpoint, I wouldn't do it. I'd be interested to hear Eric's position from selling it that way.
Sure. So from my side of things, recourse, you know, again, it will go by state because some states do not allow you to have a dual action. You either are going to foreclose on the note and get the real estate, and that's your one remedy. Or in other states, you can go after the individual for any differential after you get a hold of the real estate. So if the property is worth, you know, then there's a note for 10 and you can sell the real estate for 5, you may be able to go after the individual for 5. So a recourse allows you to do different things in different states. And you're right, in most cases, courts are typically more friendly to the borrower. And that may not be as aggressive a weapon. But on a non-recourse note, the non-recourse notes are only non-recourse until you do something that might trigger a recourse note. They're the so-called bad boy provisions where it'll relate to environmental, it'll relate to filing foreclosures, it'll relate to not having certain things happen on the asset. So that then triggers it to be recourse. So it really is with the guys that we're selling on our site, these are non-performing, non-recourse notes. And the risk of them doing a bad boy act, which might trigger the recourse, is your real, you know, kind of velvet hammer, if you will, on this one that you can hold over their heads as you work through this. Go ahead and file bankruptcy, but now I can go after your house. So depending upon who that buyer is, yes, there are a lot of buyers out there that are trying to modify the note because they're looking for a cash flow and a steady stream. And then there's others that are out there trying to get a hold of the real estate. And it will vary between those two. But a recourse and a non-recourse really is just a matter of the risk factor and what you have as leverage towards whatever your end game is with the property, modification or take the real estate.
Okay, some shameless self-promotion. I finally get to do it because I don't generally do that. That this is what I deal with, recourse and non-recourse, and going after, even when there are non-recourse notes, they're the carve-outs for and the bad boy provisions, and even in California, which generally favors buyers, in the commercial loans, that's not true. And some of the cases that are coming down pretty much say you default, you're a bad boy. And the carve-outs on the non-recourse are getting very liberal. And I have had these conversations, and part of what I do is, hey, there's gold in them thar hills, is what I like to say. You take a look at it, because the lenders rarely go after this stuff. Rarely. Even when they have the opportunity, the idea is we get rid of it, wash our hands of it, and it doesn't happen again. And there's, oh, I don't know, zillions of dollars out there that could be collected upon. And if nothing else, it should be, as Bob said, a sweetener in the valuation of the note.
So, well, Howard, what I would add to that quickly is that when we look at these deals, and I think Eric brings up a very valid point, the bad boy carve-out provisions that are in the CMBS loans or the securitized loans, and they also are in some conventional loans, when they are engaged, and a lot of lenders will engage them, they may not follow through, but it literally is a standpoint just trying to make sure that everybody is transparent and tries to get the deal done, whether you're walking away, whether you're doing a deed in lieu, whether you're handing the keys back, whatever may be the case. So you don't get caught with properties like we used to in the old days, back to the old notes, where people would just disappear on a weekend, and Monday morning there's nobody there to operate. And all of a sudden now we get a big problem. This alleviates a lot of that. So, you know, I think it's just more of a creating a transparent bridge between the parties. So it's a amicable, if there's such a thing, handoff. But there, you know, there is some gold in their hills, as you say. It's some question of how deep is it, and do you have a mining shaft that can get down there? So
well,
a lot of people don't want to look at that as a risk.
Yeah, I would imagine that people who are buying notes or selling notes are really not going to pay that much attention to whether or not there's value in that. But it, just like turning refuse into energy, you can squeeze more out of that. Maybe you can take that recourse or the bad boy provision and literally sell that off and allow someone else to collect on that who focuses on those things. So listen, we're going to take a short break and get a few words from the good people around here who pay the bills. And when we come back, we're going to continue on with the conversation. I want to make some reference to the credit bid issue.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to prospectnow.com and enter the promotion code Howard. That's prospectnow.com.
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Blocks CRE. Built by brokers for brokers, Building Blocks CRE is the best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more. Easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit blockscre.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Blocks CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. Log on to blockscre.com.
Welcome back to the show. And this show is really turning into a great discussion on what I consider to be a very important topic, and one that I'm enjoying because this isn't really in the mainstream with the real estate brokers that I generally deal with and who listen to the show. Eric, why don't we talk a little bit about some of the how someone can get into the market of buying and selling notes?
Their introduction to it, if you will?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. I had a really good friend of mine that would go to a cocktail party and they'd say, what do you do? And he was trying to describe how he bought notes. And he ended up with explaining what he does, having a bunch of people looking at him going, you're crazy. Just the level of risk he takes on, what he does, the unknowns, the uncertainties, et cetera. So I think if you're going to start getting into and want to get into looking at buying notes, I think the first thing that I would suggest would probably be to partner up with an attorney of some sort or get a good advisor who could help you understand what the nuances is, depending upon what state you're in. And laws vary by state, as do lawyers who can practice in every state. So, you know, here in California, you line yourself up with a Howard of the world who can explain you the ups and downs, or another lawyer out there, and just really kind of walk through what the risks are and make sure you're comfortable with those risks, because they are definitely in place. There is some uncertainty, and as Bob says, you're going to have to put some money aside for it. So I really think it's an education process to get in place and understand that. Then you start looking at the product type that you are comfortable with, you know, or make your investment decision before you do that. Am I going to be a passive holder of a note, or am I going to go after the real estate? And if you're going after the real estate, is identify what real estate you want. But it's very difficult to go out and buy notes. It's not something that is out there on the open market that you see regularly. There's not a common, you know, it's a very fractured market. So you would hope that they'd be on a site like mine. You would hope that there is an agent out there trying to get that out there. But it's not easy to find. And when you call up a bank and say, hey, I want to buy a non-performing retail note, you know, they don't have time for those fishing expeditions. So my guess is you'll want to align yourself with somebody who can educate you, and then align yourself with somebody who can get in the door of those places and knows the right contact that can help you source things if you're not a sophisticated, already-in-place type of investor.
Bob, how did your clients first get into the buying and selling of notes?
Well, I mean, you know, I think to Eric's point, you have the ones that know and the ones that don't know. Like, I'll give you an example of trending. Last year, we did 82, I believe, assisted no sales, where we basically were hired literally as the intermediary, the facilitator. This year, already to date, we've done 58, okay? So, you know, so we'll easily hit 100 this year. So I think people are realizing they need to get the attorneys, you know, the people understand the process. I think it's, you know, back to what Eric said, it's word of mouth, people talk, you know, find people that are in the industry. I mean, buying a note is not buying a, you know, a deed of trust. It is a different animal, and you really need to understand it. I tell people out there when I speak about this, picture a piece of paper, a small little pamphlet in your left hand. That's the note. Midway in the air, it catches fire. It's on fire. You have to be able to grab and hold on through the fire and then deliver it to the right side. And, oh, by the way, you had to have read the entire thing and understand it. And so many people don't do that. So that's why I think getting help, whether it's through legal counsel or through third-party intermediaries that have loan experience. I mean, most loan platforms, if you show up there and you've never bought a loan, they're going to probably either, one, turn you away, or you're going to be kind of put on the bottom side of the list. If you show up with somebody, either, one, already has the experience of doing it, or, number two, that has done it directly, they're going to have a much better shake at the indicative bid processes like we and others run. I mean, Eric's process is a little bit different. However, you know, they're still going to look at certainty to close because they, us, everybody else, has to represent that to the creditor. And, you know, when I'm looking at it from the creditor standpoint, I want to know that the borrower is going to be able, or the new purchaser is going to be actually able to execute, so you don't get a scenario like Eric's, because unfortunately, all too often, that is a true case that happens a lot. And unfortunately, it's time is money. And so if I know I'm going to close in 60 days or 90 days, that's okay. If I go 60 or 90 and then I got to add another 30 to 60 to 90 to it, it's a bad deal. So I think that's where you get people that don't have experience in it, but they want to be invested in it or coming into it, or they'll get involved like our new co-invest fund. That's all that does. And they co-invest with us. So we basically run the lead on it, but they're involved, and they get to have a say in it. Those are the vehicles you'll see going forward.
Almost like a mutual fund. You don't really know how to invest the money, but you give it to someone who knows how to do that.
It's a blind pool investment. I mean, you're going to have, okay, this fund's going to go after retail. This fund's going to go after, you know, office. And then, you know, it's going to say this fund's going to go after auction.com product. This fund's going to go after another company's product. This company's going to go after client product. It doesn't. You need to be, you know, even though you're not regulated, you have to have, you know, one, have a track record. Number two, you've got to be able to deliver on what you sell, because it's very hard out there with the REO properties, the note properties, and all the uncertainty unknown, and then add all the jurisdictional issues into it to really understand what's going on. So, you know, that's where getting people to have experience, or at least getting, like, on Eric's site and going through the tutorial so you really understand the process. I mean, you know, theirs is extremely well-written. I wish ours was. It's awesome. And, you know, maybe auctions aren't for you. That's fine. Then go look at the other way. But you still got to understand the business you're getting involved in.
That's something that I'd like to get into and I'd like to talk about is what people can do to learn. And I think auction.com is a perfect opportunity to educate yourself. So we'll be talking about that right after we come back from these sponsors.
Do more business with your biggest clients. Techniques Marketing has perfected exciting new ways to increase your revenue with all your key accounts, way beyond trial and error. And we've done it with some of the biggest companies in America. Look, if you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, let's talk. Visit TechniquesMarketing.com. T-E-C-H, that's the tech. N-I-Q-U-E-S, there you've got the Neeks. TechniquesMarketing.com. If you're a retail tenant, you really should belong to the NRTA. They're an organization of the tenants, by the tenants, and for the tenants. Whether you manage a large portfolio or just a mom and pop, the National Retail Tenants Association is on your side. NRTA exists to protect retail tenants everywhere and to make sure landlord billings are correct. Don't wait for your next statement of CAM charges to arrive. Log on to retailtenants.org. That's retailtenants.org. Find out more today. For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @creradio,
or via email to questions@creradio.com.
Welcome back to the show. Just before the break, we were talking about how the inexperienced buyer of and seller of notes could educate themselves. And the analogy that I draw is this. I bought a few cars in my lifetime, probably far too many. And when I decide that I'm going to buy a car or I'm interested, I literally go around to various dealerships. I go online. I educate myself so that by the time I'm ready to buy a car, I know what cars are I'm going to target. I know what it is about the cars that I'm interested in, and I know the approximate price that I'm willing to spend. And one of the things that I really liked about auction.com is that it's got a tutorial process that really, well, it's not just the tutorial process. You can participate in the auctions where you could actually learn a great deal about what you have to pay attention to. Eric, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So participating on our platform is relatively straightforward. We try to make it as open and transparent and easy as possible to get engaged. There are tutorials. There are people you can reach out to and talk to. We do have resources that might be able to help educate. But what we do is we allow folks to go online, sort and search by what they're interested in, and then get into the due diligence vaults. They'll sign confidentiality agreements. They'll get into the due diligence vaults and get a chance to see what's in there. We can provide checklists of things that you'll want to look at. We provide an advisor that's there to answer any and all of your questions. The game plan is to try and make sure that you're as educated as possible on it as to what the concerns are with the note, where it is in the, if it's going through a foreclosure process, if it has not started yet, if they have any sort of feedback from the borrower, whether the borrower is going to, you know, as Bob say, walk away and mail you the keys the next day, or if the borrower has said, you know what, this is my life savings, I'm going to fight you tooth and nail, by the way, let me introduce you to my lawyer. Those all play into the risk level and the value you'd want to participate in on that that note. So there's plenty of opportunities for you to reach out to. We ask that everybody does their due diligence up front before going to auction. And when you're going to auction and the auction is running, you are hopefully at that point fully educated. You understand what's going on with the note and with the real estate, and you are comfortable at the amount that you intend to bid at to be able to pursue this note.
Well, one of the differences between buying and selling in real estate and buying and selling of notes is that you can't inspect the real property. Is that correct?
That's correct. The note, you're selling a note. You're not selling the real estate, so the lender is not in control of the real estate. So you can't just assume that you're going to, in pursuing a note, be able to walk onto the property, talk to the property manager, interview tenants, get on the roof, do all that, because the seller is not the real estate owner. If it's public area, yes, you can walk in through the public area. You know, a retail center, it's awfully tough not to be able to walk into a store and, you know, buy a pack of gum and check things out and see how many cars there are in the parking lots, et cetera. But you can't walk into, an apartment complex and start inspecting units and looking at those or get your guy on the roof. So you are correct. You have to do your physical inspection of the real estate from the public venues and through basically your viewings of that and what's in the document files as far as property condition reports, environmental reports, et cetera, but you are not to get on the property or call the borrower or interfere with that process between the borrower and the lender, because one thing we haven't talked about is really the borrower and the lender are in negotiations, if you will, and I put that negotiations in quotes, as to what's going on with the note. So if you're going out as a buyer and getting in between the borrower and the lender on that, that could be problematic. So it's highly discouraged when you're in a note sale to have that communication ongoing and have people interfering with the property when they're buying the note.
Let's make this absolutely clear, and we stated it in the beginning. This is not buying and selling of real property. It's a separate and distinct asset. Correct?
Bob? That is correct. You're doing due diligence on the property, and you're doing due diligence on a note. That's the other differential.
Right, right. What about brokers? Do brokers get involved in the auction.com process? I know that this is something, one of the videos that we put on our website, another shameless promotion on my part with Eric, and we talked about brokers' participation in auction.com. But Bob, when I spoke to you previously, you had indicated that you've participated in auctions on auction.com.
Absolutely. I mean, majority of those were hired by a third party to facilitate, to our earlier conversation, to assist the unfamiliar people in the unfamiliar territory of buying notes, how to buy them, how to strategically try to price them, and ultimately hopefully become the successful bidder. I mean, if we do our job right, we'll get it for them. But, you know, often than not, we walk away. And it's just that's the nature of the business with the amount that things cost. I mean, if you look at this business as a whole, you know, you are buying an instrument, you are not buying, you know, the asset, and you really need to understand that part of it. So the brokers, where we have had big benefit, and we do represent Sperry Vanesse nationally for their loan sales and others as well, but primarily for them on the big broker side. But all brokers from all the different shops, the big ones and small ones, do a tremendous amount of the broker opinion and values that I spoke about earlier. And those are very, very, very important for the pricing on the process. And theoretically, so you have some real in-tune market research that's right to, you know, to the asset, right in that level. And by having that and by involving those brokers, it really makes a big difference. So, you know, I love to lean back on the brokers to find out where the numbers are. We have probably in our database, I bet we have about 2,100 registered brokers that have referred clients to us to buy notes, even some to sell notes. So, you know, they get involved in the process stream there too, because it's an alternative just to straight up real estate for them. So the brokers are very actively involved in I would say, all three sides of this transaction.
I would agree.
Yeah, good. One of the comments made earlier was about being a facilitator. Isn't that what auction.com is?
Yeah, that's correct. We are a process or a platform. We're not an owner or a buyer. We're bringing it, you know, we're an online marketplace that's bringing buyers, sellers, and brokers to a specific point in time to be able to acquire and meet and make and match a market for a asset, whether it be a note or a piece of real estate. So we're facilitating a transaction.
As an analogy, you're literally the courthouse steps. No?
That's probably fair, yeah.
Okay.
Only we like to do it inside of a ballroom instead of at a cardboard table on a courthouse step, but yes.
Yeah, I condemn that. Yeah. Now, the picture I have is someone sitting in front of their computer as the auction is going on, watching the number. Well, what before we go on to talk about this, and Bob, I want to talk about you being a facilitator when we come back from the break, but what is the process as the auction is going on? What do people see?
So what do people see on the screen as they're as they're pursuing?
Yeah.
So on the screen, what they're seeing is they will see the property, the current price that is being offered, the current bid that's on the table, what the bid increment will be to make the next bid. It'll have a spot where they can write in a dollar amount. And if they are actively engaged in the bidding, they've registered to bid. If they've bid and they're the top bid, their screen will show green. They'll have an email sent to them that says you are currently the top bidder. It'll say current bid X, next bid is X plus Y. And if you have bid and you've lost, your screen flashes red, lets you know that you've been outbid. You receive an email on it. But what you're seeing is a very transparent pricing mechanism that is different from a traditional process. So in an auction, you know exactly where the last offer was. You don't know who made it, but you know that where exactly the last offer was. And if you would like to continue to participate, you know that to participate, the price is going to be the last offer plus the minimum bid. In a traditional process, when you're making an offer, and usually you're sending that in either through the broker's process or through to the owner, it's on a piece of paper, it goes to the back room, and you don't know where you are in relation to the other buyers. You could be higher than them, you could be lower than them, you could have different terms, you could have, you know, a greater due diligence period. It really is unknown. So what the auction process brings to the table is a level playing field where the only thing that differentiates you from the next bidder is that price, and we're showing you the price on the screen. So it helps you make that decision. Now, do I want to continue to participate on this knowing I've got an equal chance at it? I just have to pay $5,000, $10,000, $25,000, $50,000 more than the next guy. And that helps both buyer and seller in that for the seller, it allows them to continue participating. It's an endless best and final, if you will. And for the buyer, it also helps him get comfort that he's not the outlier bid by $2 million, $4 million, $6 million, $1 billion. He is right there just above market, and it's not one of those expressions where you lose for winning. You know that you are above the market by a very small amount, and you can justify that to your committee or to yourself and help you sleep at night.
Oh, now, we're going to have to take a break right now because you've been talking a lot. No, I'm teasing you. But the truth of the matter is, what I really want to know is if I'm in front of my screen and I stretch accidentally or I cough, does that mean I make a bid? So we'll talk about that when we come back.
What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail. And it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com, create your own account, market your empty spaces or view available locations for your business, all on one convenient site. PopUpInsider.com.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. tacticsmagazine.com.
Welcome back to CRE Radio with our guests, Eric Paulson and Bob Klein. And gentlemen, no, I lied. I'm not going to be talking about making a mistake in front of your computer and raising your hand. Although, you know, with video stuff now, I suppose you could do that accidentally. But I suppose that auction.com doesn't have video interactive where everybody can watch everybody else. Although that would be interesting. Bob.
What they do need, Howard, is they need to have a heart monitor. I mean, you can watch your heart rate go up and down as the process goes across.
That's very fair. Even knowing that I can't beat it, it's so difficult not to just click the mouse. I get it.
Oh, my goodness.
Howard, you can't spill your coffee and make something. A bid. There is a yes or no. Did you really mean to do that button? You would push next. So you got to screw up twice to make a bid.
Oh, okay. Well, that's important. That actually makes it. Did you really mean to bid $40 million on that property worth $1.5 million? It's a good question to ask. Bob, switching now, you talked previously about also being a facilitator, just like Eric was referencing auction.com as a facilitator. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
You know, where they are a facilitator, and we're a facilitator for the same magnitude. We're either facilitating on the behalf of a buyer that's trying to buy, or facilitating on the behalf of a creditor that's trying to sell. The difference is that we actually are also a buyer in some cases with our funds. We represent 7 primary funds and 2 alternative funds. So we actually go beyond just a facilitation. Now, we don't ever do it in the same auction, and we don't ever do it, you know, across from each other, so we're very, very careful about keeping up a wall between them. However, you know, we do have to kind of do both sides because we do buy for our own book in the sense for our fund. We certainly don't buy our own clients' things that have come to us in the old days of the restructuring practices that we had that we sold or anything else unless we have authorization to do so. So, but in the CMBS world, we find ourselves occasionally for people that we did service as a client come back to us and ask us to help out where we're now putting the new equity capital in, or we might have to have the money to pay Eric for them, and that's where we get re-engaged to back into it. So we do kind of tread that water periodically. More often than not, we are a facilitator just like him. there are several out there that are just broker dealers in the registration process, and they are full fledged buy and own, and we call it lending to own or foreclosing to own, whatever you want to call it, and they're taking that risk that they're going to fill up their platform with enough loans that they'll get a foreclosure steady, and they'll be starting to have that hedge going down the road.
Bob, is licensing required to participate? And I know that it depends upon what it is that you're doing. Why don't you give us a little bit of a breakdown of where and what kind of licenses are necessary and when?
Sure. On a foundation standpoint, no. More often than not, there's not a license required. Certain states do require certain registrations and licensing. If you were going to, this is asked to us tremendously by a lot of brokers, network hits a lot of brokers. A broker cannot go sell the loan. They either need to take it to a firm like Eric's or ours or somebody else's to sell the loan, and they can get a referral for it. If they try to sell a loan, they can sell in most states one time. But if there's three brokers in that same office under the same broker and they sell more than one note, then that's called a like-kind act, and technically you should be securitized licenses, whether you have a Series 7, 66, 24, you know, a broker-dealer involving process, because it's a lot more involved. So more often than not, it's not a regulated side of the business. If there's public money, if any of my funds have public money going towards it, then yes, I have to use my broker-dealer side in order to engage that, to keep it FINRA compliant. I mean, for our sake, we run everything as if it was FINRA anyway, so we don't have to worry about it. But for the small shops or the small buyers, no, they don't have to. From a selling standpoint, some of the institutions can sell it under their thing, and then, again, you're the, as Eric said, you're the facilitator for that institution, and they'll have all the licensing requirements they need to have in order to unload it in terms from a creditor standpoint.
Eric, do you have anything to add to that?
I think Bob nailed it.
I love asking that question.
When you become doing a ton of it, and not necessarily when you're selling the one-offs, and a lot of times you have a seller that is selling on their own account, and therefore you're just providing market knowledge for them, and they're the ones that are using it. So we just have to have a license. We have a broker's license. We have a broker's license and an auction license that allows us to run an auction in those states under the rules of those states. So that's how we get licensed.
Right. Does either one of you have anything in addition that you'd like to add that you feel that we haven't already addressed?
Bob, you want to go first?
I'll go first. I mean, I actually kind of want to go back and just reiterate a point before. If you're going to be in the note business and you are going to be buying notes, it is not REO. You will not own it. So be prepared. Be prepared with both financially, mentally, and in some cases physically to take possession or charge of that property. You have to have the understanding and ability to be able to work it out if that's deemed the best way to go, or the foreclosure process where you get the Howards of the world to assist you from a legal standpoint. And you got to really understand that. So, you know, just cautious to it. It's a great way to invest. It's a great way to add value to something. You're going to have more risk with a note versus an asset, but then again, that's where your upside, or as we refer to it in the capital markets business, that's where your lift will come from in the process. So, you know, with that, Howard, I appreciate you having me on here. I'm anxious to hear what Eric has to say going away.
Sure. I will do one parting shot as to what we didn't discuss, and that is if you are not going to come to a Bob or to an auction.com to find the asset and you're going to try and research and go directly to banks, your best course of action is usually to go through with the borrower and be a white knight. Going to a bank, you shouldn't go in with a fishing expedition in mind. You should have a specific asset in mind. There are resources out there, TREP as an example, to find out where notes are going bad. Go in with a specific request in mind. Be prepared for the bank to tell you that they need to go to their borrower base first, or you need to pay up above an appraisal. If you're going to special servicers, I would just let you know you probably don't need to break your pick on that one. They rarely do one-off sales. In most cases, they have to go establish a market as part of their fiduciary, and that's why you see them using either brokers or my platform to establish that market. So if you are going after notes, find that advisor that will get you in. Just realize that banks and special servicers are difficult to get into and really get on their list of folks that they'll be willing to work with you on. So probably would say find a professional or leave it to the professionals, but get engaged through somebody that knows what they're doing to start. And then once you're the expert at it, people just come to you.
Well, that's
Eric,
great.
You know, quick thank you for the White Knight plug. I appreciate that.
And I might add, if anybody's got any questions, I'm sure that both Eric and Bob will help you out. Their home and cell numbers are just teasing. That's not going to happen. Okay, so do either one of
we were listening. We were just waiting.
I know you're
that.
Going. Did you get?
I know where you got that heart rate monitor up. That worked.
I know where you live. Yes, Eric, as you may know, I know how to find you because I do a lot of collection work. Okay, so do either of you have any speaking engagements coming up or anything of significance that you would like to let people know about? Eric, why don't we start with you?
Sure. The next few speaking engagements for me, I believe I'm at a RealShare conference coming up. I will be at the California Redevelopment Agency, the League of Cities conference that's coming up. I am more than happy to roll out my business phone number and have people call me. I'm happy to answer questions either about the auction process or about buying notes in more detail. So, Howard, you're welcome to either throw that out there or I will just throw the number out there. But those are probably my next two that are coming up. And feel free to go online and do any sort of research on our company that you want to. There are plenty of contacts within my shop, and everybody, our shop views themselves as service providers, so everybody would be willing to take that call and help you walk through that process and get you comfortable with it.
Yeah, and I would encourage you to go on to auction.com and register in order to prepare for the show. I did that, and it's fascinating. I hope that it doesn't become habit-forming to me. And
I don't.
Please.
I do.
Yeah, I know you do. Bob, how about you? Do you have any speaking engagements coming up or places that you're going to be at?
Sure, I plan on being speaking at the beach and then in the lake and wherever I can go for the summertime. No, reality is that for us, we are at a lot of the conferences. We have the IMN West Coast Financial Conference in September, the Crittenton Conference in Miami, the ICSE NOI, Marcus Millichap Investment Trends Conference, and the annual, third annual Midwest Banking Institution. I'll also be at the RealShare, as Eric will be. So I think, again, you know, anybody at my shop is more than happy to forward and help anybody with the perspective from our side. And if you want to buy something from Eric's thing and you're not comfortable, we would help you as long as others would too. And, you know, you can certainly go on our website and register, or you certainly may email us. And, you know, Howard, I'll you know, let you go ahead and forward all that out to everybody and your listeners, and we'll go from there. But we're here to help. As Eric said, we're here to provide a service and our expertise and our 30-plus years of doing it. And we feel, you know, it's a value add to you if you're going to play in this, you know, in this, so to speak, risky space.
Well, you two have been great, and I mean this. I don't say this to everybody. Actually, I do a little bit, but I really mean it this time. You guys have been great. You've pitched in. It's been an easy, comfortable discussion. You've done a great job. I really appreciate the time that you've given to me and my listeners. I do want to let everybody know two things. We do video now, and you can go to our website at creradio.com, and you could even see Eric being interviewed by me at Recon, and we have quite a few other videos going up now, and we call them short but sweet video tweets because we focus on a specific topic of that interview. So there may be separate videos. But for those people who have a short attention span, it's perfect for you because it doesn't go very long. Our next show is going to be on an update on the lease accounting standards. And other than that, we will be at... Oh, we're going to be at the ICSE Western Conference in September, and we'll be doing quite a few interviews over there. So, gentlemen, without further ado, I really like to thank you for really participating here and doing a great, great job. And for everyone else, you have a great summer.
Thanks, Howard, and thanks, Bob.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Please listen again next time to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Every live and recorded broadcast is accessible on your desktop, tablet, or smartphone at creradio.com or in iTunes, just search for CRE Radio. Here's how to reach us with your questions, feedback, and show topics you'd like to hear about. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented on an informational basis only, with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our listeners. Howard and his guests' conversations specifically do not offer legal advice. If you need legal advice, please consult your own attorney. Portions of the show may have been pre-recorded. Unauthorized editing or copying of the show without the express written consent of CRE Radio is strictly prohibited. All rights reserved.
And that's a wrap.